Next curve.
Cheers. Hey everybody, this is Leonard Lee, executive analyst at Next Curve, and we're here in Barcelona in a restaurant called De Nassus, and it's a very delicioso. Or is that Italian, or is that right? Is that right? Okay, so I'm here with my friend Mark Bruce, who is the IoT host, who is the IoT giant, and he is very big, as you can tell. He makes me look like a child. And then I'm here with Earl Lum, Mr. Rant Radio. Yeah. And we had, at least I had 6 days of MWC here, starting on Saturday up till today, which is Thursday. And we're going to give you a recap of MWC 2024. What the hell is the tagline for this thing?
Future first.
Future first. And we're going to start off with that. No!
Present first, right?
Present first. What the hell's wrong with everyone? Yeah, we got to get things right first before we start, you know, trying to sell operators and everyone else things that are maybe too futuristic and you probably, if you're a vendor, can't deliver on.
Well, exactly. Right? It is open, really open. There's a whole lot of stuff we can go over.
I mean, you don't need to be an analyst to figure that out. Come on. You know?
Right.
Yeah, so what did you think? You know, we had an agenda that covered a lot of stuff,
right.
But why don't we start with the open RAN?
Right, so it's really not that open.
Yeah.
It's open for the incumbents. And Team Japan. Team Japan and the incumbents are open RAN. Fujitsu, NEC, Team Japan. And
make sure you speak loudly.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, Samsung, best quote of the conference about open RAN. Everyone is open to try, but not everyone will be the quarterback.
Yeah.
So the big guys will be the winners.
Open RAN Squid Game. Open RAN Squid Game. Hold on, where did it go?
I don't know.
Where'd it go?
Put in your bag?
Here somewhere.
You being quite called the open RAN generative AI or what?
Yeah, okay. So, yeah.
And the whole, you know, Vodafone push for open RAN.
Squid game.
Who wins, Vodafone? Probably Samsung. A lot of it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and so lessons learned that can still be learned. It is a squid game, and play the game like it's a squid game. You know, like, I think the important thing for a lot of the Open RAN players to understand that from most of the operators' perspective, this is going to be a hybrid RAN play. It's going to be some kind of blend of the traditional stuff, you know, that might have a O-RAN compliant or O-RAN ready flavor to it with some of the more pure versions or incarnations of open. And so, you know, this is just playing out kind of like the way we've been talking about for the last 2 years. So, you know, hopefully the Open RAN players will, you know, make the adjustments that they need to be competitive and continue to play the game. Because, you know, it's getting tighter and tighter, right?
You know, rural, great for Open RAN. Private networks, great for Open RAN. High capacity, high density, urban areas, not so much. Depending on, at least for the small guys. And if you're an emerging company, those are the areas that you want to focus on. But obviously, they're not sexy. You want the macro RAN, but that's for the big boys.
So, hey, Mark. What do you think? IoT.
I think IoT is still not dead.
No, it's not dead. It's not dead.
It's
far
not
from
dead. But I didn't see a lot of IoT, but I just met some really interesting people.
Yes.
I learned how it was doing dog fooding with IoT. So I'm going to close another IoT division.
Yeah.
As Azure or Google.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's super interesting. Right?
So, yeah.
Yeah, there's some interesting things, but nothing like that.
There you go. Nothing super special.
Yes.
On the IoT front. Well, you know, I think there was some, there is some gradual improvement. People are starting to talk more about, they're talking about solutions. I don't know if they understand how hard solutions are, right?
Yeah,
at least they're talking about,
this for years, right? So for us, it's like, we talk about this, no? 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Why are not people still so getting this? Not a legal solution, right?
But it's really hard. It's not easy. That whether you're a big company, and actually, especially if you're a smaller company, smaller player, because part of being a solutions company requires you to have software, hardware, services, and then all of that stitched together with some sort of focus, orientation, and solving a problem, right? And that's the challenge. And as a business model, there are not a lot of companies that are very good at that. So that really is the hurdle. And again, that's the difference between saying you're going to be a solutions company and actually being able to form yourself into something like that, assemble the capabilities, develop the competencies, and deliver solutions, right? And it's particularly hard for hardware product hardware companies, because the business model is so different.
Every day, hardware needs to be tied with software.
Yeah,
they don't know how to do that. They all the business, as you mentioned, all the business models related with the software and services.
Yeah,
they are not used to work with that. So that's a massive problem for hardware companies.
It is.
But then when software companies want to get into hardware, that's even more messy.
So let's talk about the other thing that was like kind of like hypey, which was NTN, the non-terrestrial stuff. What did you guys think? You hear anything that was interesting, or was it just a bunch of people talking about spectrum and trying to figure out how to test and measure, astronomically small signals that can be, broadcasted to nowhere and transmitted back to a LEO satellite or GeoSat satellite?
Well, it'll be a LEO. You're not going to get enough power from the handset to get to the GEO, right? I mean, but for those that are old enough to remember Iridium, Globalstar, this is not that, because it's actually standards based. So there is actually some real potential, unlike the other GEO systems. Since they were proprietary, they couldn't get the scale, couldn't get it onto every handset, and because it's in the standard, there will be chipsets that support it.
Yeah.
So there will be phones, and that will scale up. The real question is what's the model going to be, right? And how do you do the roaming agreement between the mobile operator and the SATCOM guy?
Yeah.
And how does that all transition? And what is that premium package as a service to the consumer to say, I want it for the weekend because I'm going to go camping. And I know there's a tower there, but then on Sunday, I want the service gone, and I'm back to my mobile service.
Yeah.
I buy these, and I can spin up these packages.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point.
And it's looking real, right? But the problem is, you can't have 50 companies throwing up 50,000 satellites per network and expect that none of this shit is going, none of this stuff is not going to crash into each other in whatever orbit that they have.
Yeah, I'm going to have to excuse him, apologize on his behalf, because remember, we've been here for a very long time. All of us, except for him, maybe, had an absolutely packed schedule. It was like ridiculous. That's why you haven't seen a lot of stuff from me during the week, because it was like, what, 8 a.m. in the morning? No, wake up at 6:30 a.m. in the morning and then get back to go to sleep at around 1 a.m.
1 a.m.
Since how many breakfasts did you have every day? How many lunch did you have every day and dinners?
Oh, we're taken care of. We're taken care of because we go to all the you know, like analyst luncheons and you know, and then the vendors take care of us because they know that we're starving.
Exactly.
It works out. Yeah. So for all the vendors that we met with and operators who treated us well, thank you very much. But I apologize on his behalf because we had a long week. Okay. The other thing, let's talk about Metaverse. Metaverse.
I didn't see anything about
that. I didn't see anything.
Okay. Next topic.
Exactly. Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. Let's talk about generative AI. Your favorite topic. What'd you think?
I saw an interesting app from Google about how we can replace people's eyes that are blinking and you have a better picture. Right? So it fixes the picture because someone in the group closed their eyes, they were looking in the wrong direction, they're not looking at the camera, and you can fix that. Is that a good use of AI? I have no idea. If you can make people skinnier, that would probably be a key use of AI, but that's not really AI, it's just modifying something. So I'm not really sure what the apps were that were out that were important. What did you guys see?
I think that all of us can use a little bit of AI to make we have no makeup on.
Exactly.
So
I think one of your favorite topics that you saw there is a telco generative AI thing, right?
Are you asking me? Okay, so let me lay it out for everyone. Generative AI did AI a favor. Generative AI actually highlighted how there's actually some really great classical applications and work that has been done, right? And frameworks and application models that have, and architectures that have been developed. A lot of them work, some of them don't. And you know, a lot of the vendors, especially if you talk to the engineering teams and you actually bother to ask critical questions, technical questions, they'll be very honest with you. But this stuff is hard, right? And a lot of effort has been put into, you know, ML, you know, classical deep learning, and a lot of progress has been made. And now my perception is this: all that good work, yes, it's starting to get attention, a little bit of, you know, like a halo limelight. Then now you're overlaying this generative AI thing and introducing risk into process. And trust me, I've had some very interesting conversations, and consistently I arrive at the same conclusion. And right now, there are no best practices. There are a lot of very bad practices. Lack of recognition of what the technology is able and not able to do. And so there needs to be a much healthier, holistic thinking about how you leverage this technology before you put it in front of a customer, before you even think about using this to do anything on the network. And again, I will emphasize, I don't talk to marketing people about this. I talk to technical people about this who actually have AI experience. All right? And I am not wrong. How's that?
Pat yourself on the back.
I know. I love doing that. Can you believe this is my podcast? But you know, I mean, come on, we worked hard, right? We worked hard for you. And so we're just trying to share some honest perspective.
And what do you think about all I saw in most of the big booths about this private 5G network
Yeah, that's a good question.
Is it something getting mature and not mature? Or?
I mean, in the U.S., it could work because you have unlicensed spectrum that you can tap into. But in areas where you don't have that spectrum, without the buy-in from the operator, it's not going to happen. Because what it is, ends up being a fancy word for DAS,
yeah.
Which is an ugly three-letter word in the wireless community today. So there's opportunities for private 5G, but you have to solve the critical perpetual issue of how do I get the operators to buy in to wanting to have access to their signals and their spectrum to enable everything to work inside.
Yeah.
The U.S. model a little bit different because you have CBRS, but in Europe and everywhere else, when you don't have this, you have to have that buy-in, and that's going to be critical. And we've seen it successful in China, but outside of China, it's been very, very difficult, right?
Yeah. And by the way, I'm not yelling because I'm angry. I'm yelling because I don't know whether or not this is going to be a good recording.
Right.
Okay? I'm not angry. I'm not mad at you. But yeah, I agree with you. So, you know, here's an interesting thing that I observed. I don't know if you guys know, but there's this company, I forgot the name of it, and I apologize to people. I actually discovered them at the NAB show. Just accidentally bumped into them. And what they did is they set up for Prince Charles coronation, they set up a pop-up 5G network to support the broadcasters. This year, I don't know if these guys saw, like a lot of the vendors saw what these guys did, but you saw actually a lot of 5G networks in a box type of offerings, which I was like, oh, wow, we didn't see this last year. And, the interesting thing is that this could be a cool opportunity for operators to basically, you know, like for special events and things like that, whether it's sporting or what have you,
right.
Or even emergency services, have these pop-up, you know, prompts. Yeah, exactly. But leveraging all of their spectrum assets, and then they can basically charge B2B, B2C, whatever. And I thought that was a really interesting development. That has some implications for private networks, but it's a complete, it's a different angle. It's not
typical industrial manufacturing enterprise
unlicensed spectrum play. It's actually a licensed play that the operators can actually use to create monetization opportunities. Because the problem is a lot of think about it, even at a venue, you only need that capability and capacity during an event. But imagine, for instance, F1 in Las Vegas. Why build out more capacity and network than you really need? Just roll these pop-up things out to augment the existing network on your own spectrum, and then charge the hell out of F1.
Yeah, and hopefully that's what T-Mobile did, right?
Maybe.
I don't know.
We have no idea. But T-Mobile, if you're listening,
more slicing. Slice more.
Yeah, slice more. So what else? What are other key takeaways you guys got from
I think everyone understands that they don't know what the hell 6G is going to be. So there's no point in talking about it right now.
Yeah.
And they don't know what the heck 5G Advanced really could be, whether it's red cap or anything else. The only part that could be tangible, again, is the NTN stuff at this particular point. There's some momentum and there's some reality that could happen there. And because it's being standards driven, that's going to make it a little bit more easier to get traction with it, because the handset is the key, right? Chipsets are enabled, it's the standard, every phone's going to have that chipset,
yeah.
Every phone's going to have SATCOM capability, whether it's L-band or S-band, but you're not going to try to talk to a GEO satellite using millimeter wave, because that would be stupid.
Yeah.
One of the things that I learned, that maybe it's not from this whole Congress that I learned, it's the cybersecurity new regulation in Europe. So Europe is going to force all the companies that sell IoT devices in Europe to have these cybersecurity things in place.
Yeah.
And as well a product cycle for software updates or operating system updates in place.
Yeah.
When you sell these products to European countries. And this is something that, yeah, some companies don't have this solved, sadly.
Yeah.
That's so that's an opportunity, right?
Absolutely.
To solve that for these companies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, regulatory changes are always going to be an opportunity for somebody out there.
But I think it's a must. So if you want to make a product, you need to have this in place. And sadly, it's not happening.
Right.
So it's the right time to start thinking of this strategy.
Who does? Because they're going to be in the first mover advantage to take advantage of it. Absolutely. Because the other guys are going to take some time to enable it all, and by that time you can secure that socket.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
I did think it was, you know, it's actually kind of a welcome thing that there wasn't so much focus on 6G. I think just people now have an allergic reaction to it. But 5G, there wasn't a lot of talk about it either, and I think that's bad. I really think it's horrible. And you know, I've dubbed it the detrimental disillusionment, and I think that's where we're overshooting on the downside, especially at a time when a lot of handsets are out there, a lot of devices are starting to come out that actually support a good portion of the 5G, you know, like the pre-5G advanced features. And then now we're, in the next 2 years, we're going to start to see some of the 5G advanced features come out. And, you know, when you look at it from a, you know, competitiveness of nations from a technology perspective, disregarding it. I mean, like, did you really hear anything about 5G? It was like almost like people were embarrassed to talk about it. Right?
Yeah, because it hasn't made any money. It's only cost the industry billions of dollars.
Right. But that could be, that's like the natural reaction, right? To be disillusioned. We don't want to talk about it because it was hyped and it's disappointed. But that's, you also have to fight that, you know? And I was, you don't want to talk about disappointment. I was disappointed that people were disappointed and became overly disillusioned when actually there's now opportunities coming about that where operators can now start to look at a different set of value propositions and maybe revisit and rethink the decision to move toward 5G SA. So anyway.
I mean, I think if you're still in NSA, you're not really doing 5G. You're not leveraging any of the 5G capabilities.
You're disappointing yourself.
Yeah, exactly. but it was the it was the most economic way to go. And even, you know, DSS, which was fake 5G, was, again, the same easy way to say you have a 5G signal on your phone. The regulators are not going to ding you, right? But now, as you go to real 5G, the question is it's not just about wanting to spit out money for your core network to upgrade that.
Yeah.
How much money do you have for your transport network? It's just as critical. Because without that, you can't have ESA.
Yeah.
And without that, you're not going to make any money with the slicing and any other services.
Yeah, without that, you're not going to get red cap.
Or red blue cap.
Yeah.
Or any color cap.
Yeah.
And you know, I took my vaccine for 6G.
The what?
Your vaccine.
Yeah, vaccine.
Okay.
To be okay.
And are you, okay, but are you having an allergic reaction to the vaccine?
But the thing is that I was surprised to not see any 6G thing on it.
Well, the test equipment guys always have the latest, right?
Yeah.
You need a test box to test whatever's coming out.
Okay. So
they always have to be one step ahead of everyone.
Yeah. So if you guys want to know why people aren't talking about 6G and metaverse, just go back and listen to our podcast from 2 years ago. That's all you need. So now, if you want to know where all this other hype is going to go, just listen now. And then 2 years later, you're going to go, okay.
So present first.
Present first. Remember that. Let's solve the problems.
Today.
Okay, change the mindset. you know?
And then we'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah, and then maybe, just maybe, the metaverse will happen. And Earth computing.
Analog quantum computing.
Yeah. So, hey, everybody, hey, thanks. It's really great hanging out with you guys. We worked hard for you. Okay, remember that.
Right.
Don't be mad at us because we're relaxing a little bit. Yeah. But hopefully these insights are going to help you, help your company get on a better path during what I think are going to be really difficult times over the next 2 years.
Yep.
Because if we keep focusing on the future first, we're never going to get the present right and we'll never get to the future. So with that, remember, subscribe, like, comment,
something,
share this YouTube, yeah, or you know, comment, tell us we're, yeah, we're wrong, please, we'll learn from you. And remember to subscribe to www.next-curve.com. Make sure you follow this gentleman, Earl Lum at EGLWireless.com.
Yep.
And the IoT giant at I don't know.
Where did IdontKnow.com.
Yeah. But he and I are always on IoT Coffee Talk, okay? At www.iotcoffeetalk for real tech talk about IoT and everything else. And yeah, and bad karaoke.